Hello, and welcome to Breast Cancer Conversations, a podcast brought to you by SurvivingBreastCancer.org. I am Laura Carfing, breast cancer survivor and founder of SurvivingBreastCancer.org, a nonprofit organization providing community, education, and resources to empower those diagnosed with breast cancer and their caregivers from day one and beyond. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Breast Cancer Conversations. I am so excited you are joining us today. Today, we are speaking with Jackie Carter Angel, a mother, a small business owner, and someone who is living with metastatic breast cancer, specifically triple negative MBC. After being diagnosed and undergoing treatment for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma at the age of 15, Jackie was told she wouldn't live past her early 20s. She far exceeded those expectations, becoming a wife, a mother of two, a successful entrepreneur in the beauty industry. Unfortunately, decades later, and now in her 50s, Jackie received a cancer diagnosis once again, first being diagnosed for HER2-positive breast cancer, and then now triple-negative metastatic disease. If you're new to Breast Cancer Conversations, I would like to welcome you and remind you that our podcast is made possible thanks to SurvivingBreastCancer.org. Hop on over to SurvivingBreastCancer.org/events to see all of the free programs and resources available to you, from expressive writing, meditation, art therapy, yoga after deep flap surgery, meditation, breath work. I think I said meditation again. I think I really need to meditate more. Support groups for inflammatory breast cancer, support groups for all stages and subtypes, including metastatic disease. So lots of resources for you, absolutely free to our community. So check out survivingbreastcancer.org/events. Welcome to the conversation. Jackie, welcome to Breast Cancer Conversations. I am so excited to have today's episode talking with you about a plethora of things. I think our listeners are really going to find a way to resonate with so many aspects of your story. Being diagnosed, you were mentioning at the age of 15, very young, with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and then just kind of thinking, all right, I had my cancer exposure, and then being diagnosed with HER2-positive breast cancer, and then later with metastatic triple negative breast cancer. So talk about a whirlwind of experiences that you're able to bring to today's conversation. I am so glad you're joining us today. And so if you would like to introduce yourself, where you're calling in from, and let our listeners know.
Oh, thank you so much, Laura. It is a real pleasure to be here. I am actually calling in from Southern California, sunny Southern California, although it's quite cold here today. And I live here with my husband, and we have two children and two cats, and life is grand. And you're absolutely right. You know, I always joke when it comes to my cancer diagnosis that I have become an expert in cancer. Not something I ever really wanted to become an expert in, but over time, that experience just kind of piles up. And next thing you know, here we are.
It's like a whole new vocabulary and every day managing something. So yes, you're unfortunately in good company. So diving right into, you know, your original breast cancer diagnosis, if you would like to like take us back to, you know, a little bit about your, like, how old were you? How did you find it? Was it through a routine mammogram? Did you find the lump yourself? Just walk us through like a day in the life and kind of take us back to that moment, which I know can also be triggering. So just word to the wise, you know, just, you know, what you're comfortable sharing and what you'd like to.
You know, it's very interesting. I did find my own lump by accident. Actually, for both breast cancers, I found my lump. And I wasn't actually doing a self-examination. It was just one of those things where my hand ended up somewhere and I felt something that just wasn't supposed to be here. I think the most alarming part of that was the one of them. When I found it, I had just had a mammogram couple months prior and it was fine. So I wasn't even top of mind that this is something that I should even be concerned with. And yet there it was. So when I was younger, I guess I never realized the importance of self-examination because I always thought I was too young to get breast cancer or it wasn't going to happen to me. But what I am realizing now is that more and more women and men, but women at a younger ages seem to be, developing breast cancer. And they were just like me thinking, I don't have to worry about that now. I'll have to worry about that 10 years from now. And the fact of the matter is we do have to do our own due diligence and take matters into our own hands, literally.
Yes, literally.
Simply, right? To figure out what's going on with our bodies. But the first time I was diagnosed with breast cancer, it was very disturbing because I was at the top of my career. I traveled extensively for my career, over 90 countries, 6 continents. Uh-huh. And it wasn't just like I was traveling and doing office work. I actually was a spokesperson. So I was on stage in front of tens of thousands of people talking about the beauty industry and skincare and all things beautiful. And I got this diagnosis. And as you know, the things that come along with it aren't...
The opposite of beautiful.
Yeah. Suddenly I don't have any hair. I don't have any eyebrows. My lashes are gone. I've had surgery. I've got this, you know, all this going on. And I kind of started to feel like a fraud because I never told anybody that I was sick. I wanted to keep it a secret because I didn't want to compromise my position at work. It always been one of those things that I never really wanted to talk about. I wanted to keep it private. So my whole world just came crashing in on me. And that feeling of being a fraud and pretending with the fake lashes and the fake hair and the fake breasts, and really? You know, it's a lot to deal with psychologically. It's like, who am I?
Yeah, absolutely. And so can I ask, do you mind sharing how old you were with your initial diagnosis?
It was 2003. You really want to know my age, Nelson?
If you don't want to share, you don't have to share. But you were talking about like...
It was 2013. So what's that, 10 years, 11 years ago? I was in my mid-40s.
Mid-40s, yeah.
Yeah,
no, and I think so many points just to like, you know, dive a little bit deeper into, and I appreciate kind of the opening of the can of the worms and all the directions we can take this conversation, right? So more and more women are getting diagnosed at a younger age, right? It's no longer this old ladies, grandmothers getting cancer. It's, you know, women in their 40s who are going through having a clear mammogram, just like you mentioned, very recently, and then to find that you have this lump. I was diagnosed at the age of 34 with no family history of breast cancer either. And so I completely resonate with this idea of, you know, we need to advocate for ourselves. We need to know our bodies. We need to understand the changes that our bodies are going through. And I wasn't high risk. I had no family history. And so similar for me, I found my own lump as well. And it was actually misdiagnosed for 2 years. So when I was 32, I thought that there was a lump underneath my lymph nodes. And then, you know, people were like, oh, it's probably an ingrown hair. It's probably this. It's probably that. And then you just start to believe it. I was like, well, it's always there. William, who you just met a moment ago, he was like, okay, what is this? And I'm like, I don't know. I've always had that. It's always been there. And that's become my normal. So I didn't actually see that as alarming because no one else seemed to be worried about it. Mm-hmm. 2 years later, it grew in size. I started to have to like advocate for myself. I asked my primary care to write a script for my first mammogram, which was a diagnostic mammogram. And, you know, the rest is history. It was cancer. So, mm-hmm. you know, I really understand what you're saying when you're just, you know, even if you're not doing a self breast exam, just knowing your body and understanding mm-hmm. what your normal is. And, you know, even if you're going through like your menstrual cycle or going through a crazy stressful time at work or anything like this, like just knowing how your body responds to that, I think is so important.
Absolutely. Jeez. And, you know, it's interesting because I think so many people, they want to give us positive news and say, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Like you said, it's probably this. It's probably that. When what we really need is someone to hit us over the head and say, get your butt to the doctors.
Yes, exactly. <You know>? Exactly. And so I think you made a really interesting choice. I'd love to dive into like, how do we talk to our employers about our diagnosis? Do we, you know, at one point, you know, needing to tell HR if we need time off to go get chemotherapy treatments or radiation treatments, but then that decision, that personal decision of telling your manager, telling your boss, telling colleagues can be, you know, overwhelming in and of itself. Can you tell me a little bit about what was going through your mind at the time?
Well, you know, it's a very interesting topic because it really depends on the people that you're working for and how they identify with illness. Mm. And you can have a very empathetic boss who, you know, maybe has had experience with cancer with a family member, and they just want to nurture you and take care of you and make sure that you have everything you need to get through the day and to keep your job, and it's never going anywhere, and they're going to, you know, wrap their arms around you like a big hug. And then you also run the risk of having to work for someone else who may not feel that same way and tend to look at you more as a burden to the workplace, and that job needs to get done. And now they've lost faith that you're going to be capable of doing it. So it's definitely a tricky little dance that you have to do. But, you know, one of the mistakes I think I made early on was I put my career and my job above everything else. I didn't want to lose that job, and I lost sight of even taking care of me first. It was more about pretending that everything was great and I could do it, and I never said no, you know, yes, 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 to the point where I just ran myself ragged. And now this time around, I realize I was probably quite foolish about that, because it's just a job. I have family, I have friends, I have my own health to take care of. And the sooner I start taking care of me, the quicker I'm going to start to recover. And then I can get back in the game, maybe, maybe not. But we need to start taking care of ourselves first and foremost. Forget about the rest, because at the end of the day, nobody's going to be reading your resume at your funeral, right? It's not going to happen.
Such good perspective. And Jackie, I can tell we're going to be fast friends, because I also love my job. Plural jobs, like we're workaholics, right? Like I get energy off of working and being busy and all of these things and needing to take time for myself. And it's so interesting. Similarly, when I was diagnosed, it was the first time I felt like I almost had to get sick and have cancer to really start to say no to things and delete things off of my calendar. I remember I was about to lead an orientation with a faculty member, taking a cohort of students to Chile over Thanksgiving break. Oh. And he's walking into the building. I just found out about my diagnosis, so clearly I'm not going to Chile. And I was like, you know, Professor Sims, do you still want me to attend the orientation with your students? I don't want them to get attached to me. I don't want them to get to know me. If at the end of the day, I'm not going to be going on this trip with you, and we need to find someone to substitute. And it was the first time that I was like, I have to tell someone why I'm not going, going into this thing. And then slowly, again, similar, just travel, going to conferences, presenting, having all of these obligations that give me energy that I'm excited about. I had to call everyone to cancel. Some people I told why. Some people it was more, oh, there's a health issue that's quite serious I need to take care of. You know, other people I was more straightforward with. I was like, I just found out I had breast cancer. But to then all of a sudden have a calendar that was like empty, right? Yeah. Like to have this diagnosis of, wow, this is really forcing me to stop. And it sounds like that was very similar in your situation too.
You feel like you're disappearing in a way, you know, like disappeared, and that's not a good feeling. But I also do know that at this point, and maybe you feel the same way, I know when I talk to a lot of other people who have illnesses, and, you know, they have their list of everything they want to achieve in life within a specific period of time. It's got to get done. It's got to get done, you know. And I have slowly become the opposite. My greatest pleasure is finally learning to say, no, I don't want to do that.
Exactly.
You know, I don't want to go to the movies tonight. You guys go. Like, I take joy in finally not doing things because I feel obligated, or I want to be kind, or I want to be included. No, it's my time. I don't know how much of it I have, and I'm not going to go see that movie.
Exactly. Oh, such good advice. Absolutely. It gives you kind of that authority to say, you know, I want to surround myself with the people I want to be around. Do I want to go to the movies? Do I want to get dinner with that friend? Do I just need to like curl up with a book and go to sleep and relax sometimes? Yeah. And so definitely giving yourself that encouragement to do so.
Yeah.
Oh, so yes, cancer in the workplace is definitely a big conversation. And so it sounds like you worked through your treatments.
I did. The first time around, I did. I worked, I traveled, I did everything I probably shouldn't have done. I went against my doctor's recommendations, and life was grand and it was great. But I can say this second time around, no, I decided to really slow down and take some time off. COVID had hit, you know, all everything lined up and basically mm-hmm. said, no, let's go home. Let's just take it easy. Let's hunker down and take care of Jackie for once and forget about everything else and go from there. So that's where I've been ever since. Now, I can tell you this much. When COVID hit, I did start my own skincare company because I'm just like you. Like, you can't sit still. You go
so
mad,
hard.
Right?
Absolutely.
And I try to stay busy all the time. It's not like I'm just watching Netflix all day. I'm not that type of person. And I don't really believe that when we come down with something like this, that we change as people. We're always in there. We mm-hmm. may not have the energy to, pull off as many things as we did in the past or at such a rapid pace, but we are who we are.
Oh, and absolutely. Like
I said to my husband last night, I said, oh, it's so frustrating. Sometimes my body is failing me, but my mind isn't. My mind's got a whole laundry list of things I want to do tomorrow, but my body's, I just had treatment on Wednesday. So, you know, you're a little fatigued.
You're fatigued, yeah.
Don't have that, but the brain does. So it's this constant battle.
It
you
is.
Know?
Oh, absolutely. No, that's so funny. When I was going through treatment, I remember I started during radiation, actually videotaping myself on YouTube to talk about my treatment through radiation. That's actually really how survivingbreastcancer.org started. Even before I knew I was going to start a nonprofit, I was just going on social media to show people, like, you know, it's a Monday through Friday for 5 weeks getting these treatments done. And I was just showing people, like, how my skin was responding. And again, to your point, I was like, well, I just need to do something. Like, let me start a YouTube channel. Let me start this. Let me see what's going to happen. Because you can't just sit at home, like you say, like watching movies all day, as much as we're supposed to quote unquote rest, you know, like take naps when your body's fatigued, listen to your body. But then if you're inspired to do more, do more.
Yes. Yeah, because it can get maddening when you get in your own head, you know,
exactly.
Like it's not a good place to be. So,
yeah. So tell me about the second diagnosis and how did you discover that and what was it?
Well, my God, it was terrible. I had just gotten through the first, you know, breast cancer scenario and everything. I was so happy. Everything was going great. You know, I had the surgery and unfortunately my body rejected the breast implant. So I ended up having to go in and have the flap surgery. I had opted at the time against my better judgment in retrospect, to only have one breast removed. The doctor said, you know, my other breast was healthy and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, sometimes you get these little feelings deep down in your gut. And the whole time I was making the decision, I wasn't comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. But okay, it is what it is. I went through the radiation. I went through chemotherapy, the surgeries. Everything was great. Everything was wonderful. Went out and celebrated with my family and my friends. And it wasn't even a month later. Bam.
Not even a month later.
Even a month later.
Oh my God. So even after all the treatments that you've been through.
The celebration was very short lived.
You know? Oh my God, Jackie. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting too, because people find out different ways and my two situations with breast cancer, I just found out, like, in one case, the doctor thought that I already had known and she just blurted it out when I went to see her to get the result. And she just said, oh, so you have breast cancer. I'm like, what? Like, she goes, you didn't know. I said, no, she thought that I'd already known from a previous, big mess. And then the second time around, I had walked, my husband has carte blanche to speak to my oncologist and mm-hmm. my doctors about anything. In fact, I like that.
Yes.
You talk to him and get the dirt. I don't want to know about it.
Okay.
And I had walked downstairs when he was on the phone with her in his office. And just as I hit the bottom of the stairs, he had her on a low speakerphone and I heard her say, well, the cancer's back. She has cancer again. And I thought, can anyone just sit me down and nicely tell me?
Oh, like, my
why
goodness.
Is this always a big punch in the face, you know? Oh. But hey, there's no anticipatory anxiety that way. You just know.
Right. Oh, so
I guess that's something.
Did they find out because you were going through scans or blood work, or how did they find out it came back so quickly? Were you having symptoms?
I found a lump. I was swimming in the pool. I got out of the pool. I had my bathing suit on. I came in the house. I sat down and I don't know what I was doing. I think I was playing with the cat or something. And I was, you know, kind of chasing her around on all fours. And I just went to stand up and I placed my hand on my breast. And I thought, uh-oh, what? I'm familiar with that, you know?
Wow.
So
even after your deep flap surgery and.
Yeah, it was the other breast.
Oh, the other breast. One that
I was holding on to for whatever reason.
Okay. And, so then you went through a biopsy then to get confirmation that it was breast cancer.
Correct.
And was this diagnosis also an early stage?
No, it wasn't. It was a very aggressive. I was at stage four and the tumor was just growing quickly. And they gave at the time, the doctor said I had 90 days and there wasn't much they could do, but they told my husband they would make me comfortable, whatever that means, which is very strange because, you know, I felt great.
Yes.
And that's why I when you hear these crazy diagnosis and these statistics and all that, I don't listen to any of it, to be honest with you, because A, you don't know me and I feel good. The only time I don't feel good is when my body's completely inundated with medications and things. You
exactly.
know, it's like you get tired and you get a little nauseous and you get belly pain or whatever it is that it wants to give you on that specific day. But when you take that out of the equation, I feel like $1 million. So 90 days was laughable to me. It's like, that's so not going to happen. You don't know how I feel on the inside. You don't know my spirit. It seems kind of ridiculous.
Right. So this lump you found in your breast, and it was a large tumor. And then did they do like PET scans or CT scans or bone scans to kind of see the extent to which it metastasized?
Mm-hmm. They did all of that. We found out after that it had metastasized into my liver. So I went and I had some different procedures there, ablations, you know, mm-hmm. to remove and all that fun stuff. And pretty much that's where we are right now. It's okay. in that spot. But everything seems to be holding its own. You know, I do have a personal situation with treatment because, having all of these different types of cancer, of course, leads to different types of treatments. And starting at such a young age, at the age of 15. And mm-hmm. let's face it, back then the treatments were a little bit rougher. Thank
Absolutely.
God we've had so many amazing advances in medicine, right?
Seriously.
And you know,
yes.
It's amazing just from one year to the next how things get a little bit better and a little bit better, right? So what had happened to me personally was all of the medications had taken a serious toll on my heart. And I ended up I now have a pacemaker defibrillator in place. And I had some chronic heart failure, a little heart attack when all of this was going on. Well, I guess it was a blessing in disguise because we found it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the good news is that I'm here, but the bad news is it does prohibit me from certain types of treatment. I'm very, very, very limited because of that. But fortunately, we did find one and it's called Trodelvy.
Oh, yes. Okay. We're very familiar with that.
And I have now been on Trodelvy for over 2 years. It's actually 2 years and a month. You know, I count.
Congratulations. 100%.
And I'm so excited about that because, hey, it's a far cry from 90 days. Let's face it.
Yes.
And I just.
I don't know why they tell us that. Like, I don't need. How do you know? Like,
nobody knows. It's the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life to actually put a timestamp on someone, like an expiration date.
Exactly.
Especially. We're not gingerbread people.
No, and like, you're not God.
Know?
Like, how do you know? Like,
you have no idea what we're made up of.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, amazing. And so because you're on Trodelvy, mm-hmm. you know, for our listeners just to know, so you have triple negative breast cancer. And so, again, just kind of understanding what the types of cancers are. When I was diagnosed, I thought breast cancer was just the big umbrella blanket. You had breast cancer. So to even know that there are all of these subtypes and characteristics around your cancer and what they respond to. So when you're triple negative breast cancer, it's because you don't have any of those hormonal receptors to take treatments that would target those receptors specifically. So there are a specific subclass of treatments and chemotherapies to alleviate this. And I'm glad that you found Trodelvy. That's wonderful.
I know. It's been a real blessing. It really, really has. And I just thank God every day because I'm here and I feel healthy. It's what else can you ask for?
Yes, absolutely. Well, side bit information just to share, and I'll put a link to this to our listeners in case you guys are interested. But just to let you know, Jackie, so I've been following Trodelvy for a number of years, very excited about the work that they were doing, even when they were in the clinical trial phase. And so I do have a podcast from a couple years ago with the lead principal investigator for the clinical trial of Trodelvy. And so that was just like such a great conversation to understand like what this medicine is, how is it being administered, what are they, how does it work, and the all of the components around triple negative breast cancer. So I will share that with you so you can listen if you're interested since you are on the drug. And then for anyone who's listening to, I'll put it in the show notes so you guys can find that episode as well. So,
that's wonderful. Thank you.
No, absolutely. We always want to get information out to our members and our listeners. Mm-hmm. And then to hear how well you're doing on the drug after 2 years and 1 month. And so I completely understand, like we're counting. So, and how are you tolerating the side effects?
My side effects have been really great. You know, I try not to
said no one ever. Like, oh my God, really?
I mean, I think again, we're jaded, right? We understand side effects are going to happen. It's just really how we can manage them. And you can't watch TV anymore without having a laundry list of side effects for a nasal spray. It's oh my gosh, you know, and they're terrifying when you hear them all lumped together in one setting like that. Mm-hmm. But when it came to Trodelvy, you know, I had read the side effects, most of them. And I thought, you know, based on where I am and who I am, most of them could be deemed as very tolerable. Again, everybody's different, so it's hard to say, you know. I've been blessed once again because my side effects aren't so bad. They're bad enough, but they're not life-altering. They're not messing me up to the point where I don't want to get out of bed in the morning or I can't get out of bed in the morning. I know what my expectations are. And my husband, Mark, and I do this little thing all the time where if I wake up in the morning and say I have some crazy pain in my chin, I don't know, I'll say, hey, Mark, I have a pain in my chin. And I'll wait and he'll say, normal. Meaning expect that. I'm like, okay. And then I just go back. It's only something that's abnormal that maybe shouldn't be occurring. Mm. Those are the only things that I'm concerned about.
Right.
So even if I gave him a laundry list of 50 things in a day and he comes back and says, it's normal, it's expected, it's normal, I'm okay with it. And I just brush it under the rug and keep going.
Absolutely.
So, and I don't really always want to get into the deep dive of the side effects either, because I sometimes think if you start thinking about them, suddenly
you're like manifesting them and they show up. Exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like when you watch ants crawl, suddenly you're itchy.
Yeah.
Right? It's the same thing with these side effects. Once you start reading about them, it's like, oh my gosh, I think I have that.
Yes.
So try to just focus on what's normal. Mm-hmm. And then if something isn't just right, get into that doctor's right away and have them take a look at it. But you know, Laura, it's interesting. I've always tell people you have to drive your own bus. Like you said, this is our life. We're the pilot of our plane. We're not the passenger in the last row. And we have to have a voice in the direction in which we're heading.
Yes.
And you have to talk to your doctors. I mean, even with Trodelvy, for example, we have pre-medications that we take prior to the treatment that will help with nausea and digestive issues and all of that stuff. Well, it's not a recipe for everyone. You have to make adjustments. But the only way the doctor can know to make adjustments to help you is if you communicate and if you're completely transparent. And if you say this particular thing is giving me the jitters, well, cut it back and no more jitters. Or I'm still experiencing a lot of nausea. Okay, let's tweak that a little bit. We definitely control our recipe of life.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people, we just trust everything the doctor is saying and doing and just want to follow their guidance. But again, we're not cookies. We're not built from the same cookie cutter. We have to tell them our little nuances so they can help make our life more comfortable and livable and you know, help reduce any of the negativity from those side effects.
You're absolutely right. And so much easier said than done. But yeah. I think it's really important to reiterate, like, they can't help us if we don't talk about it. And I think sometimes, and I don't know, like, if it's just like us as women too, that we like want to endure, like we can get through it. We can fight through this. We can, you know, we've been through so much already that, you know, like, okay, well, they told me I was going to be nauseous. And so I'm nauseous. So I'm just going to deal with it versus letting the doctor know, actually, I'm really nauseous. Is there anything we can do about that? Yeah. And I'll share my personal story as well. Even, you know, as someone who started the nonprofit, someone who's hosting the podcast, someone who encourages people to advocate for themselves. When you're half naked in a Johnny sitting on an examining table, it is really hard to feel empowered. Let me just put it like that, right?
So true.
And it sounds like Mark is very similar to my William, where William would come with me. This is, I was diagnosed pre-COVID. And so he was able to come to a lot of my doctor's appointments. And he would just be, you know, on his phone doing his thing, listening, but kind of like nonchalantly, like pretending he's doing something else and multitasking. And then after I shared what I felt like I wanted to share, he would probe me and say, well, Laura, I mean, do you want to tell Dr. Urban, you know, how depressed you were 2 days ago? Do you want to tell Dr. Urban how you couldn't get out of bed and you were crying hysterically? Like, you know, and I'm like, okay, I guess that happened too. So even internally, we can be selective of what we want to share, and knowing that a lot of the medications that we're on can cause depression, but then also just a breast cancer diagnosis in and of itself is very challenging. And I remember, as we're always trying to, like, you know, get our support networks together, they're like, oh, and if you want to see a social worker or a psychologist or a psychiatrist, like, we can help you with that too. But like, I just heard the word cancer. Like, I don't even know what I need. And it wasn't until way after going through all of this that I was like, I actually do need help processing, because this is very traumatic.
Yeah. It is traumatic. And you and I are both very lucky that we have someone that's right there holding our hand through the whole process. And I always try to recommend to people, bring someone with you to your appointment, you know, a friend, your mom, whoever you trust to be there, because just like you, I hear the first word and I'm clocked out. So if Mark wasn't sitting there next to me, actually carrying on the conversation with the doctor, I would leave and wouldn't know if I had a toothache or a headache, quite frankly, because you just kind of gloss over a little bit, and it's to be expected. And it's also good to have a good cop, bad cop, because sometimes I don't want to bring something up because I'm the one they're going to be sticking with that needle, not him, right?
Yes, completely.
And he doesn't care if they get mad at him. So it's nice to be able to. But yeah, I've been thrown under the bus a few times too. Just
like, yes, with the best of intentions, for sure. Amazing. And so how are you doing now? So, like, you're in active treatment, it sounds like you're living your best life. You seem incredibly positive, and you have your own tactics for, you know, kind of being engaged with your diagnosis, but then also being able to take a step back and know what's really important to you.
Yeah, I'm actually doing really well. I'm probably doing better now than ever before. You know, a lot of really great, it sounds crazy to say it, but a lot of really great things have come out of this bout of cancer. It's brought me a lot closer to my family. I started doing a lot of drawing, which I'm not creative at all, and I'm not artsy at all. But for some reason, you know, being up so many late nights because the steroids, which were part of the pre-meds, couldn't sleep. And I just didn't know what to do with that crazy brain that just wants to keep running. And the body says no. So I started drawing, and then I would send the drawings back to my mom and dad, and my mom would look at them and she'd say, oh, this is so pretty. And then she would start hand embellishing them with little gemstones,
diamond dust.
Lo and behold, for the past 2 years, we started our little business, and her and my dad have been going to all the local art shows and craft fairs in upstate New York, which is where I'm from.
Whoa.
And we have this cute little business, and I do the work. My mom hand dazzles them all, and we're having a ball. And the reason is because, you know, it does get exhausting after a while when my mom and dad would call every day. And the first thing is, how do you feel?
Yes.
Are you still have a stomach ache? How's your head? It's like, I don't want to talk about it. Yes, I still have my headache. It's probably never going to go away, you know? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about something else. But it is hard to talk about something else because that is on the forefront of everyone's mind. So just by replacing that with this common interest, we are having a blast.
That's amazing.
We are constantly, and we're working as this family unit. Even my brother, who's turning 60 this summer, he goes and helps them set up at the art fairs, if you can imagine.
Oh, that's amazing.
My husband, he's helping us out, getting, you know, the right things for the tent and the tables. And it's just changed. We've all become so close that this horrible disease has, my parents are in their 80s. My brother's 60. I'm creeping in there. You know, we're later. We're not kids.
Sure.
And here we are all bonded together like never before in a very positive way. And for that, I will be eternally grateful to cancer. And that may sound stupid, but you know what
I mean. Not at all. Absolutely. I can't wait to see your artwork. I'm going to have to travel to upstate New York, which is a beautiful part of the country. And, you know, I think that's so interesting. We've started at SurvivingBreastCancer.org, what I call, it's like coloring with SBC, with SurvivingBreastCancer.org. It used to be more formalized as like an art therapy class with an art therapist leading the work. And now we just meet as survivors and thrivers. We do a little bit of a meditation. We read a poem about a theme. And then we take that theme into our coloring or doodling or anything that we want to do. And then we share. We meet once a month. And it's like one of those funny things. Like I rush in the door and I'm like, oh my God, one more thing we have to do. Like, are you kidding me? Let me get on the Zoom. Let me make sure everything's set up. But then like 90 minutes later, I am like on cloud nine. Like that is so what I needed to have, you know, the meditation, 25 minutes of just me time doodling and coloring and figuring out like, I need more purple because I need to feel more relaxed, you know, and then sharing and then seeing how people, what they decided to draw, whether it was tied into the meditation or something completely like, this is just what I'm going through right now. So I need to scribble it out and use a lot of blacks and reds and heavy, you know, pressure on the colors. And then knowing that you're in a community where everyone understands like what you're going through. So I would love to invite you to one of our next session in February.
How fun is that? What such a great outlet. You know, we do have so much to look forward to. We just got to take advantage of, these moments and you know, coming together as a team and just making it happen.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I love your story. I love your optimism. I love everything that you are sharing with us, despite the circumstances of a breast cancer diagnosis, a second diagnosis, living with metastatic disease. Are there any other like golden nuggets or words of wisdom you would like to share with anyone else who's been perhaps recently diagnosed at having a recurrence and having a metastatic diagnosis?
You know, I wish I had the perfect thing to say to people. We never really know when we do talk to people if they're listening. I believe that they are, maybe not in the moment, and maybe something will click in later and they'll say, oh yeah, that's right. I heard her say that and it's true. I should try that. Or even with, you know, telling all my girlfriends, you have to do self-exam and check for lumps. I thought it all fell on deaf ears, but then 6 months to a year later, I would get a note, hey, because of you, I made that appointment, even though I didn't want to. And, you know, so people do listen. But I also think they listen to what they want to listen to.
Yes.
And that's why I try to keep all negative nonsense out of my life. I don't want it. It's not good. I like positivity. I like whim. I like pink. I call me crazy. I like unicorns. I like things that are happy. Don't come in here and admire my whole life with negative drama and side effects and, oh, it's torturous. No, it's not. As long as you're alive, as long as you can get out of bed in the morning and see your friends and family and talk to people and pet your dog or your cat, life is good.
Yes.
And we have to take advantage of that. And sure, it's going to be hard. Who said it was going to be easy? Nothing in life is easy. There's always somebody else out there who's got it far worse than we'll ever have it. And the mere fact that we have this illness and yet we have a a treatment protocol or a plan and mm-hmm. doctors and nurses and people who are giving us their attention every single day to keep us going and keep us motivated, I try to give that right back to them. And I have nothing but love for every doctor and nurse and practitioner, anybody affiliated with this in this world that we live in.
Yeah.
They are doing what they want to do to keep us going. And if I can make someone smile every day, then that's why I'm here. No negativities. Keep it positive. You know, it's very easy to crawl into bed and pull the blankets over your head and cry and sleep for 2 days. It's just as easy to get out of bed, go downstairs and make yourself a strawberry milkshake.
Yes. Which is also pink, which I love.
Yes.
Jackie, amazing. What a great way to close today's conversation with just love and positivity and energy, recognizing that we're allowed to have our bad days, but we don't have to stay there. We have the opportunity to be positive, to surround ourselves with the things that give us energy, to give us hope, and to move forward. So one day at a time. Thank you so much for being on Breast Cancer Conversations and sharing your story and sharing all of your energy and your love and light. It's been beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much, Laura. Right back at you.
And thank you, everyone, for listening to our show. I would like to acknowledge that all of the information on our podcast are from personal experiences and are not a substitute for professional medical advice. You should always contact your medical care team. If you're looking for specific topics or would like to be a guest on our show, please feel free to reach out to me. My email is laura@survivingbreastcancer.org. Until next time, keep on thriving.